Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
Here's DeBrusk going wide, drops his shoulder, shoots, he scores! Jake DeBrusk, barrel on the line, into the right circle, drop the shoulder, got a step, and then whistle the wrister by Freddie Anderson, 5-4, Bruins!
Welcome to Tape to Tape, T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I'm a writer for Sportsnet.ca. With me in the booth, as always, Sportsnet's NHL editor, Rory Boylan.
What a game seven between Boston and Toronto. Who saw all those goals coming? Did you?
Yes. I thought there was potential for Boston to score seven. I thought it might have been a 7-1 game. Sure. I didn't see the back and forth. I definitely went into that game thinking it was the epitome of a road team's got to survive the first 10, and then we'll see what happens. And obviously it was bananas right from the beginning, which I only kind of heard about because I was at the Blue Jay game, but there was a lot of reacting in the crowd, and we managed to sneak up to a TV for the last 10 minutes of the Boston-Toronto game and see the finish. Yes, the last game of round one, the Boston Bruins eliminating the Leafs in seven games, going through to the second round. We are, of course, going to tee up round two, Bruins, Bolts, Caps, Pens. Again, stick around just for the stat I'm going to steal from Twitter and tell you about on that series. Over on the other side, the series we all saw coming, Winnipeg and Nashville. We're, of course, going to dive deep on the Jets and that heavyweight tilt. And Vegas, San Jose. So there ended up being eight total games in the Pacific Division first round. And if you'd asked me to set an over-under, I probably would have put it at like 13.5. Sure. Like both those series seem to have seven-game potential. However, here we are. Well, we can't.
Heavy hockey, slow hockey is dead. That's what those series proved.
Apparently. Well, exciting hockey was certainly in vogue last night in Boston. We got to go over, pick the bones of, I guess, in terms of games anyways, what was the closest series? What are your takeaways after watching the Leafs claw back into a series that they once trailed 3-1, that they got spanked in the first two games that were down 2-0? It almost seemed like they were dead then, but they wound up going down to the very end, took a lead into the third period, but ultimately too much from the Bruins.
I mean, it's a fantastic series for the Toronto Maple Leafs, is it not? To fight back from a 3-1 deficit, which you got into without your number two center, Nazem Kadri, suspended for a good chunk of that series. And that's a huge loss for anybody.
Huge loss.
Especially for a kind of a young team still trying to find their way, playing against, you know, the fourth best team standings wise, maybe the best team in the NHL this year all around in the Boston Bruins. But the way they were able to fight back was, I think, a great showing. I think, you know, I've seen definitely some criticisms aimed at Jake Gardner, probably rightly. He didn't have a very good game.
Some from Jake Gardner.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, he did not have a very good game. I mean, Austin Matthews didn't have a very productive series offensively. But I don't think that you can overreact too much to this series if you're a Maple Leafs fan or, you know, involved in running that team. There are certainly some changes that are going to need to be made. I think there are two defensemen that they need to bring in. They're still searching for the number one guy, maybe a 1/2 to go with Morgan Riley. But I think you definitely also need an upgrade on both Ron Hainsey and certainly Roman Polak, somebody else who's quicker, probably younger, can move the puck a little bit better. Those things need to happen. But in terms of big sweeping changes, you can't really take anything out of this series and say they need to do anything like that, because remember, this was a very tough test against the Boston Bruins. This is the kind of series, the kind of opponent that you would normally see in the second round or the conference final. This would have been a team that is fully capable in Boston of going to the Stanley Cup final and winning it there. It was a very, very high level opponent. I think if Toronto matched up against Washington in round one like they did last year, I could see them winning that series and doing it in earlier than seven games. It was just a bad draw for the Maple Leafs. But I think the takeaway is that they can hang with the best team in the NHL, and they're still getting better. I thought Mitch Marner's series was phenomenal, sign of better, bigger things to come for him. I think Austin Matthews is bound to have some great playoff series in his future. You know, Morgan Rielly, I thought Freddie Anderson had a really great series for them. We'll talk a little bit about that. He certainly looked his best when they were clawing back from that 3-1 deficit. But I just thought it was an all-around a good showing, frustrating loss in the end, but a pretty good series overall for a young Maple Leaf squad.
Yeah, it was hard to know. As I was watching the series, I was at games 3 through 6, and I had a moment where I thought, well, even if the Leafs claw back into this, I don't know how far they're going because the D didn't look
right. Good.
And
yes.
And certainly, I mean, the way Zaitsev was playing, it was hard to imagine that they were going to, you know, if they could find a way to beat Boston, go too far. But then you're right. You look at it from the flip side and you go, well, maybe this is just the opponent doing this to them, that they are playing such a good team. That first line is better than advertised.
Best in hockey.
They're unbelievable at keeping the puck in the other team's zone.
Yep.
Brad Marchand is just unrelenting on the board. Spin, keep it.
Yep.
They were so good. So yes, I mean, I don't know who is panicking. Anyone who's calling for sweeping change has lost their mind.
For sure.
I was saying to a buddy, the only team I can think of that had the straight up trajectory was the Taves Kane Blackhawks. The first year they had those guys, they made a huge leap and almost made the playoffs. And fans thought, hey, next year we'll make the playoffs and do something. And the next year they made the playoffs and made the Final Four. And fans thought, hey, next year we'll win the Stanley Cup. And then they won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
I don't know the other team that's done that. So
right, yeah.
If you're a Leaf fan going, whoa, my God, we're way better and we made the playoffs last year, this year we're going to win the Stanley Cup. You know, it's just, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
It very, very, very rarely works like that. So
it's so much about who you draw in the Stanley Cup playoffs, what the matchups are. Would Toronto have done better against Tampa Bay, who has problems on defense of their own?
Sure.
It's entirely possible that style of play the Leafs play would have been better matched up against a Tampa Bay Lightning team, although Andrei Vasilevsky was phenomenal in the first series for them. But it was just overall a bad draw. They are building. It's not always, like you said, a straight up. It's going to be a little bit of a bumpy ride here and there. The only cause for concern, and it is kind of minor, is that in a year from now, you're going to be having some big, big contracts hit the books with Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Willie Nylander. All these guys are going to get some big money, you'd think. And that's when maybe some difficult decisions are going to have to be made. That's a long way off from now.
We know basically for sure that Bozak and Van Riemsdyk have played their last game for the Leafs.
Probably.
That will, you know, clear some room. So we'll see what happens there. You mentioned Anderson. I will say, I mean, obviously he was the hero for the Leafs at times, but I wasn't shocked that Boston was able to get to him in game 7, partly just because, let's zoom out a little bit or take a step back. It did go 7. Boston could have won this series in 5 games.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, based on run of play, the Bruins were clearly superior. I really thought they could have won game 3 and made it a 3-0 series, and who knows what happens then. But yeah, Anderson was amazing at times, but even in his best moments, I still felt like there was a little uncertainty. I mean, I go back to game 6 where he wound up being the star of the game, but early on, Marchand took a shot that leaked through the pads, and you know, it was just very up and down, and they got buried in those first 2 games, and it wasn't Freddie Anderson's fault,
no.
And nothing was going their way. But I mean, hey, he's clearly their guy long term, and I mean, the way the first 2/3 of the season went for him, he was unbelievable. But you know, he had a little injury and probably never quite got fully reset. I felt like,
I think he outplayed Tuukka Rask overall,
absolutely,
but maybe not by as much as he needed to steal this series. I was a little bit surprised. You mentioned off air coming in about your take here on Freddie Anderson. I was a little surprised. I looked up the high danger shots against on Corsica.hockey. I was surprised that Tuukka Rask faced twice as many high danger shots right in the slot as Freddie Anderson did. And Freddie Anderson's save percentage in those situations was far higher than Tuukka Rask's. So I was a little bit surprised to see that. But I mean, he had his moments. He certainly kept the Leafs in that series. If not for Freddie Anderson, if James Reimer perhaps is in net, this series is probably over in five games. This is what Freddie Anderson can do. He keeps you afloat there. But I think he just needed to play better than Rask a little bit more than he did. This is definitely not on Freddie Anderson, though. He saved their season.
Clearly. Yeah. Well, there will be another time for the Leafs, no doubt. Still lots of promise there, but a first-round exit for the second year in a row. That means Boston will play Tampa. You had Boston going to the final. I had Tampa going to the final, so we don't have to bother with what we think is going to happen in this series. We've both already bet on a horse. But my question with Tampa is, and I guess this is what I was betting on, do you feel like they got a reset in that first round? Because essentially in the second half, whether it was Vasilevskiy or the whole team, they weren't the same squad that they were in the first half of the year. And now it seems like, you know, the goalie bounced back and things are rolling. Do you give them a good chance against the Bruins, who you ultimately think will prevail? Or do you think this is actually tilting heavily towards Boston?
I mean, I'm picking Boston, but I think it's pretty close to a coin flip between these two teams. There were 1 point separated them in the standings. Clearly, both of them running away with the division through most of the season. But my concerns with Tampa Bay remain the same, that they were outshot by New Jersey in round one. The thing that was really different for them in that series compared to the second half was Andrei Vasilevskiy was phenomenal, a save percentage over 940. I mean, from January 1st to the end of the season, that was around 906, 905, something like that. So he needs to keep playing at that level. He really is, you know, their ace defenseman almost in a lot of ways. Victor Hedman did not get a point at all in that series. But I think something else to look out for here for the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, their top line is going to get some goals. You know also that Boston is going to attack them with probably their top line. They're going to want to shut those guys down, really, really focus on them. And just like Toronto, the key for them was getting a lot of production from Mitch Marner in that line. The key for Tampa Bay is going to get points from their second line, Braden Point, Andre Palat, Tyler Johnson. Those guys combined for 4 goals in round one against the New Jersey Devils. I don't think the production is going to be as high for the first line in Tampa Bay as it was against New Jersey. So that second line is probably going to need to stand out a little bit more, just like the Marner line did. But really, it's going to come down to, can they stop this Bruins offense? Is the defense for Tampa Bay going to be able to hold up? And if it's not, how good is Andrei Vasilevskiy going to be? This is my concern. Tampa Bay is all offense all the time. Really rely on your goaltender to be strong. And Boston can really do everything so great. Boston was the only team this year that was top 6 in goals for, bottom 6 in goals against, and top 3 in both power play and penalty kill. So they can just do everything. It's been set up and down. And Tampa Bay is really focused on one line and all offense. And it's just, how is that going to match up? I have to go with the all-around team. I think it's close. I think Tampa Bay can skate maybe Boston out of the building and maybe outdo them on offense. But I think when it comes down to it, in the playoffs, defense wins most of the time, and that's why I'm still going with the Bruins.
I'm picking on goalies today. I don't know how much I believe in Rask.
That's the problem for Boston, for sure.
So I was sitting beside a big old Leaf fan, well, at the Jays game, but we were watching the Leafs game and the score. And when the Leafs went up 4-3, I said, honestly, my fear would be now they put Khudobin in, and he shuts the door. So, look, I don't want to pick on a guy with the numbers Rask has, but he's not lights out. And,
He was saved by Boston's defense in Game 7 against Toronto. I think it was the first 8 minutes or so of the third period, Toronto did not get one shot on goal. I mean, that turned it around, right? Boston was able to get the offense going, kind of take Rask off the hook a little bit there. Had it not been for that, Boston might have lost that game because he did look shaky.
It's funny how much a conversation about a player or team can sometimes get skewed by context, as in, you know, when we talk about NHL rookies this year, there are 5-6 guys, including Boston's McAvoy, but you got Besser, you got Barzell, you got Kyle Connor. So when you talk about Jake DeBrusk, you're like, oh, he's a good rookie, but he's behind all those guys. And then you watch him play and you're like, well, he might be behind those guys, but he's really good. And he might be ahead of some of them next year.
Yeah.
That's the thing with the Bruins, that watching them up close for a week and a half, yes, the first line is amazing, but boy, throughout the lineup, they have guys who can make you pay And Rick Nash, he didn't do a lot offensively, but I thought he was sniffing it. Game six in Toronto, I thought he might end up popping one, and he didn't. And he's a guy I've got circled for. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes out and scores 5 goals in a series. So
yep.
It's more than just the top line there for sure.
Yeah, and if you build a team on, like I said earlier, heavy hockey and a little slow, if you are so focused on that, it doesn't work. Rick Nash is kind of in that mold, but you still need an element of that on your team, I think. You can't build out your entire roster like that, but maybe one line or one or two players on a line to have that kind of presence, that kind of toughness. I mean, he's really difficult to deal with in the corner, too, and he can drive the net really hard. I mean, him with DeBrusk, I mean, that is really, really tough for defenses to deal with. I see that line breaking out a little bit more as we go on, maybe against Tampa Bay, where the defense can be taken advantage of a little bit more, but... to your point on DeBrusk, the Bruins, it's surprising how many rookies they use this year. Colorado led the league in games played by rookies, but Boston led the league in goals scored by rookies this year. And that's just phenomenal for a team that finished as high up in the standings as they did. And those guys are going to continue to have to be key contributors for these guys through the playoffs.
Shout out here to Josh Yeo of The Athletic for the following stat. The Capitals are 17 and 28 all time in playoff series. They are 1-9 against Pittsburgh. That means they're 16 and 19 against everyone else, essentially 500. The Pittsburgh Penguins, 39 and 27 all time in playoff series. 9-1, of course, versus the Capitals, the flip of 1-9. You take that out of the equation, they're 30 and 26 against everyone else. So they're both more or less 500
Amazing.
Against everyone else, but. Man, Pittsburgh has dominated, tortured the Caps. It goes well beyond the Sid Ovi era, but we're getting another addition, third straight year. I mean, we were saying of the least, well, they could lose to the team that went to the Cup final or goes, all the way. Well, that's what's been happening to Washington. They've been losing to the team that wins the Stanley Cup. Are they going to lose to the team again?
You'd have to think so. I mean, they weren't even supposed to get this far, right? They weren't supposed to win the Metro. They lost all sorts of depth. Last year was the one they were all in for, and it didn't work. They couldn't get past Pittsburgh. There's been some discussion whether or not the pressure's off these guys now. I'm not really buying that because a lot of the same guys, Ovechkin, Backstrom, Kuznetsov, like these guys have been there through some disappointments, and I'm sure they're still feeling the same kind of pressures as before. The key for Washington is going to be discipline. You can't give this Pittsburgh Penguins power play the advantage. They were almost the best power play of the salary cap era this year. A phenomenal unit. Of course, all the star power that they can throw out there at you. It's going to be key for Washington to stay out of the penalty box. So I'm looking at Tom Wilson to not do anything dumb in this series to give the Penguins those advantages. But on the flip side, I'm worried about Matt Murray in Pittsburgh. He doesn't have the safety net of Marc-Andre Fleury anymore, a guy fully capable of taking the starting job and running with it if you run into a problem. Murray has been pretty disappointing overall this season. He wasn't that great against the Flyers in round one, a very, very high-scoring series. So what Matt Murray is going to show up for the Pittsburgh Penguins may determine which way this series goes. They're probably going to get their goals. They can spread out their stars, make any kind of combination that they want. Chris Letang is producing a lot. The defense isn't so bad. But if Washington can get in on Murray and score a ton of goals, that might tilt the series enough in Washington's favor. I'm still going with Pittsburgh because of the star power, because of the history. I don't think Washington is any better equipped to take down this team than they have been in the past. So I have to go with Pittsburgh in this.
Yeah, it's pretty tough not to. Malkin, we don't know, though, exactly.
He's missing game one, him and Hagelin. So, that's also a factor, too. But when he's in the lineup with Crosby, him, and Derek Brassard, those are the best three centers Pittsburgh has had since Jordan Staal left to Carolina a number of years ago. And that is also key. They have the best centers in this series.
9-3-2 for Braden Holtby since coming in relief of Grubauer.
Huge.
Huge bounce back for that guy. I mean, obviously he's going to have to be dialed in. You're right. I mean, if that tilts heavily in favor of Washington, that Murray-Holtby matchup, who knows? John Carlson, 9 points in the first round. That sound you hear is him cashing in as a UFA this summer. Yeah, I mean, it is, other than, some kind of gut feel or sense of it has to happen sometime,
yeah,
it is still hard to go out there and pick the Capitals against Pittsburgh. I mean, it is still just kind of fun, these two teams, these two guys are going to play each other again. I mean, it's
now,
great.
Who are you hoping wins?
Oh, well, I would. There's no one left I'd rather see win the Stanley Cup than Ovechkin. And Joe Thornton, if he could get back, would be like a hair behind. Sure. But I would love to see Ovechkin raise the cup.
Me too. He might be the best goal scorer in the history of the NHL. This guy can't seem to... I would like him to at least see a conference final at some point. You know, Crosby has won everything. Yeah. Can Ovechkin win something, or at least knock off Crosby or something like that? He could have a huge series. You know, he gets knocked a lot for maybe not being a playoff player, and he has disappeared at times for sure in his career. But when it was on the line against Columbus, he scored two goals in that game six. He guaranteed they would come back home even after they dropped the first two games in that series. So kudos to him and that team for fighting back and winning those four games in a row when it really looked like Columbus might end up running away with that series with a couple overtime wins. They were able to overcome that adversity, and that's a big thing that you look for in the playoffs, too. Teams that have to face a late penalty kill or something like that. How do you fight through these things and not just give up? And I thought they showed that fight in them, and that's something promising moving ahead, but it is tough to pick them against Pittsburgh.
They did show something, no doubt. Ovi, 5 goals in 6 games in round one. We will see if he can finally get the best of Sidney Crosby. Coming up on the other side of the break, we're going to jump to the left coast. We've got the matchup everyone expected, right? Vegas, San Jose for the Pacific title, and of course, no tongue-in-cheek this time, the matchup everyone expected, Winnipeg, Nashville. What a showdown that is going to be in the West. We will break it all down on the other side of the break on Tape to Tape.
It's getting near dawn. When lights close the tired eyes, I'll soon be with you, my love. Surprise. I'll be with you, darling, soon. I'll be with you when the stars start falling.
Schmidt gets to the puck, pushes it up against the rim with 3 seconds left. Kopitar tries to fish it out. Here comes the horn. It's over. It's a sweep for Vegas. The Knights beat the Kings 1-0. 4 straight wins to start their inaugural Stanley Cup playoffs. The Vegas Golden Knights advance.
In the sunshine of your love.
Well, there you have it. Yes, some people did pick the Vegas Golden Knights to beat the LA Kings. I was not one of them. I thought the Kings would win in 7. Not only did Vegas advance 4 flipping games. Wow. What a story this team continues to be, and here they are. I mean, we can officially say there's absolutely no reason not to believe this team will stop short of the conference final. It would now be no surprise at all to see them in the Final Four.
No, and the icing on the cake in that LA Kings series, too, was Braden McNabb scoring the goal, who, of course, was plucked from the LA Kings by the Vegas Golden Knights in that expansion draft. So the team of revenge coming through, you know, they always have something to prove. I think they still have something to prove. I think a lot of people still aren't really buying into this team, but there's no doubt anymore that they're for real. You know, they faced off with that Kings team and skated all over them. The Kings are still trying to catch up to the rest of the league and adding some speed and catching up that way, but Vegas is there. You know, they get it. There's great passing from the back end. They have one of the best transition games in the league. A lot of speedy guys, some underrated scorers. William Karlsson, of course, everybody's talking about his great season, but the two guys they got from the Panthers along with them, Riley Smith, Jonathan Marchessault, so some great scoring there. The second line with Alex Tuck, James Neal, you know, these guys need to keep it going too. There's just a lot to this team. And then behind it all, Marc-Andre Fleury was phenomenal against the LA Kings in round one too. You know, they play the style of game you want to see in the NHL right now. And I think the team that they're playing in the second round here, San Jose, plays similar. You know, they deserve a lot of kudos for how they have adapted to the NHL over the years. You know, they've missed the playoffs once in the last, you know, decade plus or whatever it is, with mostly you know, the same base, but they've added some young guys. They've adapted their roster. You know, they were a slower team, that West Coast California style, when they started down this road, and now they've developed into a team that is quicker, moves the puck a lot better, scores some goals, and behind that all, they have a phenomenal goalie too in Martin Jones, who was really great in round one. So the two goalies are going to be a major focus in this series. I picked Anaheim over San Jose, so I get to pick fresh in this one. And I'm leaning towards Vegas here, but again, this is another coin flip, and it really shows the parity in the NHL that all these series are really, really tight, really, really hard to pick. It's just with Vegas, what I was surprised to see from them in round one was how they did play a little bit of heavy hockey against the LA Kings. They finished with the fourth most hits in round one, even though they just played four games. You know, they got tough with them in the corners. There were a lot of hits being thrown, and it didn't take away from the offensive chances that they were creating at the other end of the ice. Jonathan Quick had a great series, or else Vegas would have scored more goals. Overall, the series didn't have a lot of goals in it. That doesn't mean there weren't chances there for both teams, but Vegas just seems to be a little bit more well-rounded than maybe we thought. Going to be really tough against the San Jose team that really picked it up after the trade deadline, too. Evander Kane had a really good first round in his first exposure in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Another factor is going to be, does Joe Thornton come back in this series for the San Jose Sharks? We're not really sure about that yet.
I'll pick the Sharks just to keep picking against Vegas. See if I'm ever right
committed
at some point. But, man, what a story. They have put together, we almost forget sometimes just how incredible this run has been. So yes, we will see. But yeah, full marks to the Sharks for beating a team a few of us thought could go to the final, and they dusted them pretty quick there. So as we were saying before, the death of heavy hockey. It really is.
I mean, even after the Ducks got knocked out, their GM Bob Murray was talking to the local press in their wrap up, saying we need to get faster. You know, yeah, we need to adapt to this. And the big question is, how do you do it? You know, you're probably not trading away Ryan Getzlaf, because then you're immediately looking for the same kind of player. He's still in his prime and your leader. You're not getting rid of like the young guys who are coming up. Andre Kasha, I think, is ready to take another step. Rickard Rakell, obviously still breaking out here. John Gibson had a really great season that flew under the radar, maybe because he was injured. And the defense, I think, is still overall strong. The questions are, you know, what do you do with Corey Perry?
Yeah.
Is Ryan Kessler going to be healthy enough ever again? What do you do with Adam Henrique, who's a year away from UFA? You have a great threesome of centermen there, but can you keep moving forward with that? Do you use them as trade bait to get a little quicker? Like, how do you get quicker with this team? They know they have to do it. It's just, how do you get there is the big question.
Well, two teams that feel like they are getting close to their ultimate goal, I have to believe, the Preds and the Jets. I don't know if you would say a little more work than you expected for Nashville in the first round. They end up going six games with Colorado. I mean, I'm not shocked that the Avs took two off them, but ultimately, Nashville clearly showing it is the superior team. And you know, Winnipeg, I really felt like that first game was key, where it was going back and forth. You know, Mini's never gone far, but they're a sneaky, savvy team. Mm-hmm. They are obviously missing a key part on the blue line in Suter, and that was part of the reason it was even easier to pick Winnipeg. But Winnipeg being that young team with everything going on at that zany MTS place, I really thought pulling out that first win was key. Then boom, they go out and win the second. They're up 2-1. And then, of course, the ability to close. I mean, you got to believe a team, especially one like Minnesota, is going to win that third game at home. It was all about, like, could they come back with a 3-1 lead? And they did, and then just blew the doors off them. I mean, there's no reason to think Winnipeg couldn't go all the way, really.
For sure. I mean, what they're going to see in Nashville that they didn't see in Minnesota is a team that's going to be able to generate a heck of a lot more shots than the Wild ever could this season. And obviously the depth that the Predators are going to be able to throw at them. Not that Minnesota's depth is anything to shrug your shoulders at. It's pretty good, too. They just don't generate a ton of shots here. The thing that I'm watching for here, I was surprised to see Colorado outplayed Nashville at even strength for probably three of the games. Wasn't expecting to see that. I thought if there was any path to Colorado winning a couple games or maybe getting the upset, it was going to be on the power play. Nashville was the most penalized team in the NHL during the regular season, and they still took a ton of penalties against the Colorado Avalanche. So I'm watching to see, do they get outplayed by the Winnipeg Jets at 5-on-5, and can they get more disciplined? Because this team can't be allowing the fifth best power play to get a ton of time. They have to keep that as even as possible. I mean, if Winnipeg is getting a lot more power plays than Nashville, I think the series could get over quicker than you think.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be something that they have to really reel in. And Pekka-Rinne wasn't great in round one. He was okay. He wasn't as good as he was all season long. That probably makes him the front runner for the Vezina Trophy. So his play is going to need to step up. On the flip side, Connor Hellebuck was phenomenal for the Winnipeg Jets. So again, you always have to, you know, with these second year players going through the playoffs, whatever, for the first time, a guy going through the playoffs for, on his first time, how long can he sustain? Does the pressure ever get to him or not? It doesn't look like he's one of those guys that it's going to affect too much, but it's something to keep an eye on. And also with Winnipeg, are they going to be able to stay healthy? This team always seems to be nicked up, especially on the back end. Can they get through what should be probably a long, hard-fought and overall physical series against the Predators?
Is it fair to say that Nashville has the advantage on the blue line, but you'd actually kind of give the nod to the Winnipeg forwards versus the Preds forwards?
I think that's fair. Yeah, I mean, the only thing is, again, if it gets down to injuries, I think Nashville has more to draw from their black aces than the Winnipeg Jets do, but as the top three and probably top four lines are situated right now, Winnipeg certainly has the advantage. Brian Little even moved off to the wing in that first round series. So that's the kind of flexibility that that team can throw at you. On the blue line, definitely the advantage goes to the Predators. Nobody scored more points from the blue line than they did. And they probably have two, you maybe even make a case for three guys who could be on a top five Norris ballot this year. It's wild the kind of guys they have on. And Ryan Ellis is not one of those guys because he was injured for most of the season. But if he plays a full 82, he's fully capable of being on that list.
Should they trade PK Subban and his $9 million hit?
You know what? When you have that kind of depth and you have one guy getting paid $9 million, you might be faced with that situation at some point. Yep.
Just a random out of the blue hot take there for the off season. This series, is it deciding the Western Conference representative?
I think certainly the team that wins this series is the favorite, but I'm not ready to underestimate the teams coming out of the Pacific Division. I think both of those teams showed a lot in round one and how difficult they can be to play against just because of their speed and their ability to create. I don't think that I'm ready to give Winnipeg or Nashville a free pass in the Stanley Cup final. They may face a stiffer test in the Western Conference final than a lot of people are thinking.
Well, and here's the other thing. So, I mean, back in the day, Scotty Bowman used to say, you got to get out of the first two rounds in less than 10 games. Now, the cap world has kind of made that very difficult. But should either San Jose or Vegas end up with a five-gamer here?
That's a good point.
That's a fresh team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very fresh team. And yeah, again, that Winnipeg always seems to be banged up, and this series should be really hard-fought. That's a really good point. You know, health is always a huge factor at this point. Remember last year when Nashville got to the final, when they finally got there, they were riddled with injuries.
Yeah, and
they
nothing just left they down the middle.
Exactly. So that's something that's always going to be a factor. You have to kind of readdress these teams when they get to the next round. How healthy is everybody? What do the lineups look like? And then kind of make the judgment at that point.
Well, it is going to be a fun one. Make sure you check it out. Of course, you can find all the series on Sportsnet, various Sportsnet channels and CBC. Tons and tons of coverage. We've got writers on the ground. Make sure you check it out at sportsnet.ca. Keep checking back in with Tape to Tape. We'll see how the series go. We're thinking if things are close after four games, we're going to try and jump in and do a quick halfway sort of take, or two-thirds as the case may be, take. And if things are, if teams are kind of separating themselves, we may just hold off and wait and deep dive on the final four. But make sure you're checking back on iTunes or sportsnet.ca to see what's happening with the pod. I didn't give my pick. I said Nashville was going to make the final, so I guess I have to stick with them. But I don't have a whole lot of... I wouldn't bet the farm on them, that is for sure. It's going to be a serious tilt between those two teams. So make sure you watch, follow Rory on Twitter, at Rory Boylan, myself, at Dixon on Sports. Come back soon for more Glass Rattlin' hockey action on Tape to Tape.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so